Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the central coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us John Merrifield, and we're going to be talking about some of the problems in education. That's our telephone numbers again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Thank you so very much for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? I tried to call you a couple of times before the program and didn't get through to you, so we're going to have to learn about you right here on the program.
Okay. Well, I'm with the University of Texas San Antonio College of Business, and I'm a professor of economics.
All right, fine. And so what is your concern today about the what's going on in the country?
Well, about almost 20 years ago, we had a presidential commission declare us a nation at risk because of our educational system, and things haven't changed for the better. I think we're still a nation at risk, and I see it all the time in my own classrooms, and my wife used to be a teacher, and from her stories that she brought home, it was obvious why our school system was creating this dire situation, or had created it already and sustaining it. And frankly, just from participating in normal discourse, I'm alarmed at the kinds of things that people believe and are willing to do and do politically. So I thought I'd better get involved in this issue and do what I could to get it moving in the right direction.
All right. Well, I'm glad you are, because I agree with you totally. There's a real problem in education, but what is the problem? I mean, we're told, well, gee, if we just had smaller class size, if we just had more money, everything would be fine. And here in California, I think we were given almost $9,000 a year for every child, and the SAT scores are still going down. So what's the real problem?
Well, you can say things like lack of competition and lack of incentive, and all those things are true. But, you know, it's incredible that our system is basically in conflict and in defiance of just about everything that we know about human beings and human nature. I mean, it assumes that we can politically agree upon how to run an education system. It assumes that everyone should be taught the same thing in the same way. It assumes that incentives don't matter, that people perform optimally, whether it's in their interest to do it or not. The list is long, but It's just mind-boggling that when you put the political process to work on something, that it can almost always create exactly the opposite of what makes sense to do.
I always like to say there's no problem facing America today that a new law won't make worse.
Well, unintended consequences are, yeah, just the start of it. And in fact, yeah, there's an axiom that I don't remember the exact wording of, but typically when you enact a law to do something, you get exactly the opposite of what you intended.
Well, so what can we do? Should we pass more federal laws? Should we restrict the federal laws? Should we have more state laws? How can we begin to approach the problem? Because the average person has no idea there's a real problem, or at least the enormity of the problem.
Well, that's right. I'd like to keep the federal government out of it in every way other than helping special ed kids and ranting and raving a lot and about the problem and publishing data and presidential commission reports. Passing more rules about how things are to be done, I think, is counterproductive.
All right, I'm going to have to interrupt you there because we have to come to our first sort of introductory break. We'll be right back here with John Merrifield. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And our guest today is John Merrifield, and he is teaches at a business college or business university there in Texas?
Well, it's part of the University of Texas system, and the university here in San Antonio is split up into colleges, and I'm in the College of Business.
All right, fine. And of course, Mr., are you a professor or a doctor?
Yeah. How would I refer? Dr. Merrifield.
All right, Dr. Merrifield is a certain.
Well, I hope you and your college just call me John. I use that when I apply for my paycheck.
Oh, I know, but sometimes it sounds a little better when we put the doctor
right
in front of it. So,
sure,
because it makes you sound like you're more of an expert.
Okay.
And of course, he's concerned about what's happening in education, and I think every parent should be. The trouble is, the average parent, I don't think really realizes that there's a real problem. I mean, we have our sports like we always did, and the kids are getting A's and B's. The trouble is, almost nobody gets C's anymore. They've simply changed the. I was reading the other day about 15% of the kids get C, which used to be average, and then everybody else gets B's and A's. So the parents really feel really good about it, and the kids really feel good. But the trouble is, they're still not learning. They're still not getting the basic fundamentals and the discipline that they need to be a success in life. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, I think that's right. The system punishes achievement because achievement only exists if there are some low achievers, and we don't want to face the fact that not everybody's a rocket scientist. So, as you pointed out, we seem to be banning open admission that some are just not up to academic work, or we're not going to achieve at the level that some want to, and we dumb the classes down to be reasonable and acceptable and mollifying to the lowest common denominator. We throw everybody in the same classroom when in fact we should have some ability grouping so that everyone can advance at the pace that they want to and are capable of, rather than only at the pace that the slowest child in the room.
Well, now, we used to have that. You know, they used to in high school, they would have, three or four classes, and they'd put the most advanced kids in the one class, and then the next one's another class, and then you had a class for kids that weren't going to be very good advancers, but at least, that they would be competing among one another. Do they still do that, or has that been done away with because it would hurt the self-esteem of the children?
Well, it's been substantially done away with. But what you're describing is a little closer to what's called tracking than what I would call ability grouping. It's a mistake to view very many children as uniformly high or low achieving. The fact is that probably the vast majority are high achieving in some pursuits and not in others, and can achieve by certain methods but not by others, and they're not all the same. So we need to recognize that and have smaller specialized schools. As well as, and that's probably more of an answer than to have different classrooms within the same school. That's one of the reasons that it doesn't work now, is because when you do that, then you have the low achievers and the high achievers in certain areas right across the hall from each other, and it makes the low achievers feel bad and they get made fun of. If you can have them in separate schools, I think that works a lot better.
All right, fine. Well, I think that is certainly an excellent. But you know a lot more about education than I do, and certainly if your wife has been on the front line. Well, what about the reading problems? One of the things we've been very concerned about is that an awful lot of children are not being taught to read by the conventional phonics. They're being taught by look-see, or sort of a mixture of phonics and look-see, or look-Jane, run, something like that. And these kids, if they can't read, they're going to have real problems all of their lives.
Well, yeah, that's part of the problem in assuming that all children should be taught the same thing in the same way. I suppose that this look-see method had some research basis to support it. There probably were some children that did better at it, but the fact is that it doesn't seem to be working very well for many children. And if we had a school system where we had school choice, the parents whose children did work better by that method could go there, and then the other kids could go back to the basic phonics, and we wouldn't have to make it a political issue where we'd all have to go the same way.
Well, of course, I think if parents want their kids trained that way, that'd be one thing. But, of course, John Dewey knew that this system didn't work. That's why he introduced it, because he really did. I don't think he was interested in excellence. I think he was interested in re-engineering society, and that's one of the big problems, is that there are people who are using education because they want to change society. And, of course, look at what's happening to our society today.
Yeah, well, it's terrible. It's yeah, if you try to impose any one way of doing things, you're going to lose a lot of kids either by just boredom or anger or hostility. And, you know, we're getting a lot of that. We're seeing a lot of that in terms of all of the labeling of special needs and special ed and all the medicating that's going on. A lot of these kids are perfectly normal kids, other than they're not exactly like the mainstream, and they need to be put in different schools or different settings where teaching methods are different. And we just can't stuff all the kids that happen to live in the same neighborhood in the same school and ever expect that to work.
What happens now? You see the children when they get on into your college there,
yeah,
in the business college. Has there been a change in the quality of the students and their ability to apply themselves and their ability to study in the years that you've been at this?
Yeah, you bet. It's a rate of decline that is accelerating in the last few years. Not only have the basic skills fallen off, but just the level of hostility and basic disrespect that I see in the classroom has increased dramatically. It's part of the reason that I was terrified enough to do this, motivated enough to drop what I usually do, which is namely environmental, natural resource issues. That's my training, and I said, well, I love that, but this is more important, so I've got to tool myself up mentally to do this. And it took me 3 years to write my first book, and then School Choices, the book that you have there, is my second one.
All right, well, why don't you tell us a little bit about your book?
It's a relatively modest-sized book, and it says in a kind of hard-edged way why we should expect to have a dismal outcome like we have, and problems inherent in the current system. And then it talks about how to fix things, how to create a system that would work. And it also gets on the case of mainstream school choice advocates a little bit and says that they're dumbing down school choice, and if we go on the course we are now, if we ever get any school choice, all it'll do is shuffle kids around within the existing system, when what we need to do is completely transform the system. Part of what you were talking about, parents not recognizing the magnitude and such, is that when parents pick what they think is a good school, all they've really done in most cases is pick one that's not as bad as the rest of them. We with the $8,000 or so we're spending per child per year in the United States, and I'm sure much higher in your area in California, we could do a lot better than what anybody, with rare exceptions, is getting for their school tax dollar these days.
All right, fine. Well, then, of course, how can we do this? Are you in favor of vouchers? Are you in favor of parents being able to put their children into any school they want to? Are you in favor of introducing competition in schools? Mm-hmm. One of the problems we have today now is with the new federal legislation, this No Child Left Behind system, yeah, that we're going to have a uniformity of education. The federal government's going to begin testing children to make sure that, of course, they're meeting federal standards. But federal standards really are not on academic excellence. They're on values, attitudes, values, and beliefs. And, of course, they want everybody's attitudes, values, and beliefs to be the same. And, of course, many of these attitudes, values, and beliefs would be totally contrary to what their parents would believe.
Well, that's part of what's inherent in forcing every child in the same attendance area to go to the same school is to force people to pay for the contradiction of their family values in many cases.
Well, then, but, what do you advocate?
Well, you had a couple of points in your comment there about the federal legislation. What I recommend, I mean, the short answer to that, and I'll elaborate, is to end the discrimination against private school users. And we need a level playing field between all the educators who would want to run a school and let them sink or swim based on parental choice. And the mechanism could be vouchers, but when you ask a question like, are you for vouchers, and my answer is, well, it depends on how the voucher is configured. Prop 38 that you all voted on not too long ago was reasonable, but we really need an absolutely level playing field where it doesn't matter where the child is taken, the same amount of public dollars follow him or her no matter what. And if we do that, then we'll get the competition, we'll get the innovation, we'll get schools to specialize in different things. We'll get a more rapid rate of improvement in the school system. That's the key. Now, in terms of the federal, yes, that is a disaster. High-stakes testing for schools but not for children is exactly the opposite of what we want to do. It will create uniformity. It's not quite true that they're federal standards. It's the federal government saying that the state will create a standard and then everybody has to measure up to that. But it's it's not much different than that. Anything that a political body comes up with in the way of standards is going to be pretty mushy and pretty dumbed down, and just the uniformity of it at any level is a mistake. So yeah, we need to figure out some way to get by, live with, change the thrust. Now, at another level, you could argue that if we're going to stick with the current system we have, which would be a disaster, the only kind of accountability that you can get, and it isn't much out of it, is through standardized testing. And that's exactly why we need to transform the system, that one based on parental choice and competition, is because top-down accountability through standardized testing is truly a disaster in every way you can imagine.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I'm very, very concerned about these NAEP tests and some of these other things that seem to be coming out.
I was just going to say on the NAEP test, now that's just kind of a national sample, and there's nothing wrong with that other than you can be suspicious that they don't say much because the kids don't have any incentive to do well on it. There's nothing at stake for the children. Informational testing is useful and helpful to parents making choices, but high-stakes testing for schools, that force schools to teach tests and to do little else, that's where we have a disaster. Parents need some information from tests to make good school choices, but not exactly the same test applied to every single school. We need a school system of specialized, diversified schools, a true menu of choices. And if we have that, then no single test will apply to any significant number of them.
But of course, you know, whenever you talk about, of course, allowing the private schools to get the government money, they say, well, look, now, you know, what you're going to do is destroy the public school system, and then, of course, our kids aren't going to get any education. You're taking money away from the public schools, and then, of course, we're going to lower the living, the educational standards. The kids who are left in the public schools, and
yeah, I've heard all
and
all
on
that.
They go.
Right. Well, that mistake is the system over children fallacy, where we assume that because most of the kids are in a certain system where things are decided in a certain way, because that's what we mean by system, is that we're going to make decisions in a certain way politically, we're going to fund things in a certain way, and we make this leap of faith saying that, well, because most of the kids are in this certain system, that we have to safeguard that system and protect it and nurture it and not endanger it. And I say that that's completely wrong. The system has shown itself to be dysfunctional. We need to fund children and not methods of doing things, and let the choices of parents decide how, which particular methods will thrive and which will not.
Well, it's certainly the educational, though, the National Educational Association, NEA, CTA,
right.
They don't want this. I mean, they don't
want
anything to come along to interfere with their control of the educational system and their funding.
Right.
Let's go to a caller here, and we'll get to that as soon as we get back. Who do we have on the line? Who's calling in?
You have Roger in Allentown, Doctor.
Yeah, Roger, do you have a quick question?
Yeah,
just about to go to
just
a break.
Quickly, if one is to believe that government schools are susceptible of any cure, then isn't it absolutely essential to not only totally remove the federal funding, but also probably on the state level to make it as local as possible?
All right, fine. That's a very legitimate question. Thank you, Roger.
God bless.
And of course, Roger is saying, look, you know, if federal funding, of course, is going to bring federal controls, wouldn't we be better simply to do away even with state funding and keep all that money locally so the local government could fund schools rather than the money coming from above? Because whatever it does, why, of course, we have state or federal control. What are your thoughts on that?
Now or after your message?
Well, we're gonna have to take a break here, unfortunately.
Okay, I'll be ready afterwards.
All right, fine. And then, of course, I'd like to address the issue of the union, the teachers' union, which is one of the most powerful forces in the country, and they have fought this concept of freedom of choice in the schools at every turn. So we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest today, Professor John Merryfield, and we'll be welcome your calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, right here at Radio Liberty. Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish
concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America. Our values, our future are under attack today.
This is radio health journalist Bill Sardi. Hey, a lot of smart supplement users like to check out the facts before they purchase an herbal product. So go to www.lifespannnutrition.com and read all about Alamax, the new odorless, 100% pure allicin garlic extract imported from Great Britain. You'll find Alamax is equivalent to 15 cloves of fresh, crushed garlic. Check it out at www.lifespannnutrition.com or call 866-405-4000 to learn more about this breakthrough in garlic technology called Alamax. Call 1-866-405-4000 today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me tell you about the Big Berkey water filter. It's really the ultimate water filter. It's the most economic water filter you can buy. The ceramic filters can be cleaned up to 100 times or more. It's convenient. It sets up in minutes without any need for plumbing tools or electricity. It's powerful. It removes pathogens such as E. coli, cholera, and cryptosporidium, and reduces chlorine, herbicides, pesticides, foul taste, and odors. The Big Berkey is so powerful it can easily filter raw, untreated water from lakes and rivers. It's elegant. The high-grade polished stainless steel will complement your finest decor. It's flexible. It's ideal for your home, or you can move it around. And, of course, the ultimate water filter, the Big Berkey, ordinarily costs $279. It's available from Radio Liberty for $239.95 plus $10 shipping. And when you get it to us, why, of course, we offer you free either one of our four tape sets or one of our videos, and we have a list of five videos and five four tape sets you can actually pick from, unless you have some other specific request. You'll find that this is very efficient. We recommend the Big Berkey to you, and especially in times like this, you certainly want to have a means of having clean, potable water, and this is what the missionaries have used all around the world for really many years. And then I want to mention our Miracle 2 soap products. As you know, of course, we can't make any medical claims for them, but many of the people who use them really say that they've helped them in many, many ways. So let me suggest Miracle 2 soap products. There's a soap. There's a moisturizing soap. There's a neutralizer, which some people take for heartburn. It's just a very alkaline solution. There is a lotion and a gel. You can get the introductory offer of certainly a special reduced price, or you can get any of the products separately. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And ask for the Miracle 2 soap products. I'm sure that once you've used these products, you'll be as sold on them as I am. Again, the number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest today is Dr. John Merrifield, and of course he is at the University of Texas in the College of Business there in San Antonio. We're talking about, the educational system, and I'd asked him several questions. One of them was, what are we going to do about the objection of the teachers' unions, the CTA and the NEA, because they really control education. In fact, they have so much money, they take it from the teachers, that they really elect a lot of our representatives. Really what you have really is simply the legislature in many states is simply an extension of the teachers' union that's paid by the legislature. It seems to be something wrong with this situation. So how can we circumvent this problem?
Well, I suppose the only short answer to that is to recognize them as being a self-interested opponent of change,
right,
for what they are, and to stand up to them. The longer-winded answer to it is to read a couple of books, one by Peter Brimlow, who happened to share the podium with me at the Independent Institute last week when I was there in Oakland. And he wrote Worm in the Apple, which is a story about the NEA and what they're doing and what to do about them. His last name is spelled B-R-I-M-E-L-O-W for those who might want to get on Amazon and look at that, or independent.org.
The Worm in the Apple?
Yeah, which is about the NEA impacting the school system. And then there's another good book by Myron Lieberman, L-I-E-B-E-R-M-A-N, which is The Teacher Unions is the title of that. And that goes into some detailed strategies of how one might undermine the authority and the effectiveness of these of the NEA and the EFT and the state affiliates like the CTA. Now, one thing you could take a little bit of optimism out of it is, you know, they're having trouble maintaining memberships, and some scandals are breaking out that are giving some people a real look at what they're about, and so, you know, there's some room for some optimism there, but there's no question that their lives as organizations are at stake, because a union just doesn't do well when you have freedom and you have the ability to go your own way, and teachers become professionals rather than blue-collar workers, and go and interact directly with their clients and set rates differently, and all the things that we associate with professionals, deciding curriculum on their own, choosing textbooks, all the things that I get to do as a professor, those are all the sorts of things that would divide teachers into individuals, and rather than being part of a body, which is death to a union to have that. So, as I said, they're self-interested. They know that a market system as opposed to a political control of education would mean their demise, at least as we know them. They go back to just being the teacher professional organization that they were until about 40 years ago, which would be, that would be wonderful. Now, well, let me address Roger's question if we have a little time.
You go right ahead.
In case Roger has to go somewhere. Now, he said that we should get it back to local, and indeed he is correct that we had a much better situation and a much better system when the funding was decentralized, was local, and when we had 10 times as many school districts as we have now. But first of all, I don't think there's any way to go back to that because of the rulings about school equity. If we do it strictly locally, some districts are going to have more money than others, and that the courts have ruled that is unacceptable. And even if we could go back to it, it would be a distant second-best approach to a true market system in which we get the politics out of everything but a subsidy level like a voucher or a tax credit, and let the parents and entrepreneurs and other school operators decide everything. Now, when Roger first gave his question, I wasn't sure that he meant that. He may have, but I thought what he was saying is we get the government out of it completely, which I've heard a lot of people say, libertarians especially have that view, and I'm not sure that is the best approach, although it has worked well in the past. It depends on charities supporting low-income kids, I don't think that's going to happen until we get the government at least out of everything but the funding, and then we can, I think, take a little longer look at whether we ought to get them out of that as well.
Well, of course, the trouble is the government doesn't have any money. The only money they have is what they take from us by force and then give us back with the strings put on it.
That's right.
Just tying our children down and tying down the educational system,
right,
and keeping it from excellence. I mean, at one time we had one of the greatest educational systems in the world, and how you could take a system that was that good and can fund it and fund it and fund it and regulate it and end up where we are today is almost
right.
Beyond comprehension.
Well, it's like a ship getting barnacles on it, and that's how how politics works. We're putting so many barnacles on it that the ship keeps sinking in the water, and pretty soon it's going to sink completely.
Well, my concern, of course, is what it's doing to the hearts and minds of children. Children need
right.
discipline. Don't you feel that a child without discipline is like really we're laying them up for all sorts of tragedies in adult life.
Well, we can see them all around us now.
Right. All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Dr. John Merrifield. We'll welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty.
Hey,
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened at Oklahoma City, what really happened with the TWA 800 that went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America. It's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that'll give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just wanted to mention a couple of the other things. As you know, we actually carry something called Phonopoly, and it's a board game played like Monopoly, but it's designed to teach children how to read phonetically. And at about 16 hours, you can actually get them to begin to change their whole pattern of reading. And, of course, it'll teach them the 40 sounds of the English language, the basic 12 rules as far as when an A sounds like an A and when it sounds like an A, and the various sounds of the vowels and why they change their sounds. And it's all very logical. There's nothing mysterious about it. It's just they don't teach you in school. And so our whole plea is, if you have children or grandchildren, we hope that many of you want to get a Phonopoly set for them. It's a fun game to play. I've played it, and I think you'll enjoy it as well. And let me simply point out that, you know, basically, most of these programs will cost you $300 or $400. This one costs you $139.95. And we throw in a couple of books on what's happening in education to point out that there is an organized effort, in my opinion, not to educate our children to the degree that they could be educated. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for Phonopoly. And then, of course, in times like this, we think it's an excellent idea for everybody to have a food supply on hand. The government says, oh, you know, if things break down, why, do you have a flashlight and some duct tape and some a three-day supply of food and Coke? And I think that's ridiculous. You need to make preparations to look after yourself and your family. If you would like a catalog from Ready Reserve Food, you can just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And ask for a Ready Reserve Food catalog. We'll get it for you. And I think that you'll find the material in there. And it's not just food. It's many other things that you should have on hand. Give us a call at 1-800-5-448-927 and ask for a catalog, a food catalog. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dr. John Merrifield, and if you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. How can people get copies of your book?
Well, they can go to independent.org on the net, or they can type in Merrifield, John at Amazon.
All right.
And Merrifield is spelled M-E-R-R-I-F-I-E-L-D. And either way, they'll have that opportunity, and I appreciate them reading it. Although I love capitalism, I want to assure your listeners that I'm not doing this to make a couple bucks worth of royalties.
Who is the publisher? Who is the publisher of the book?
The Independent Institute
okay.
in Oakland.
All right.
They get all the money, and they put it to very good use.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I know the Independent Institute. They do a great job, and we've got Ben calling. Hi, Ben. Where are you calling from?
Hello, Ben.
All right, fine. A question or comment?
Yeah, I follow you all over the dial, Dr. Stan, and I'm a great appreciator of the books you've written, especially Brotherhood of Darkness, which all of educated America, mainly the conservatives, they want to run away from the truth in your books, but I embrace the truth.
Well, I appreciate that, Ben.
To this gentleman here, I have to say this. What's going on now is our children are being taught not to think critically nor to question authority, just to take their part in the cog of the wheel. And when they say that to take the government out of the schools and to let the corporations take over, the kids are being, they dumb them down with Ritalin and pretty soon Prozac to be a stupid little bunch of go-along little slaves, as it were. And what is actually going on with the voucher system is you have the rich white elite kids or the sons of the angry white men, they're splitting this country up, and you're going to have the caste system that you have in the Sudan, Saudi Arabia, India, where you're born wealthy and stay wealthy, and you get sent to special schools with special privileges. But if you have to be poor white...
And that's what we have now with the current system.
Okay, now, that's Ben, right now this is sort of what we have with the current system. If we had, if we could take the full, say, $9,000 or $8,500 that, you know, is spent on every child in this state, and, of course, give that to the parent and say, look, you can't have it, but you can go to any school you want to, that would be the best thing in the world for the kids in the inner city.
Yeah, but then you kill the public school system, which is what needs to be strengthened. And not to put everybody in rich little elite schools to leave the masses behind while they're little elite.
We're not talking about leaving everything behind. You're not getting it, Ben. Everybody gets the voucher. Everybody gets to go to a school with $8,500, which means everybody gets to go to a really nice school.
Well, Ben, wouldn't you rather have the right to put your child in any school you wanted to than have to put them in the government schools? Because I'll tell you, there's no way we're going to strengthen the government schools.
Well, under the present administration, Dr. Spann, I have to agree. We as parents have to come up to the plate.
We didn't do it under any of the previous
administrations
either. And
do what we know George Bush is not going to do.
All right.
God help us. If we teach the kids to be as dumb as that dumb bunny, they're afraid to let him have a meeting with Saddam Hussein because George Bush will show how dumb he is, and there's no reason to go to this war.
All right, fine. Well, we don't want to get off on the war, but thanks so much. God bless you.
Thank you, Dr. Stanley.
Thank you, Ben. Let's go to Chris. Hi, Chris. Where are you calling from?
Kentucky.
All right, fine. Chris from Kentucky.
I wanted to thank Roger from Allentown Local Control. I was going to bring that up as well. But I want to also ask your guest, have the many textbooks have been twisted, such as U.S. history, and changed for the wrong reasons, which these children are just learning the wrong things, just not what real history is? I've heard a lot about this.
Right. Politicized textbook content, and when you do that, there's about 14 groups. I remember reading in... I'm looking at my bookshelf here. Dumbing Down Our Kids by Charles Sykes, written in 1995, goes into this very very skillfully about how a whole gauntlet of interest groups have to be navigated for somebody to get a textbook approved, and as a result, the publishers put all these little politically correct tidbits in there to buy off enough of these organizations to get their books approved, and you end up with a 20-humped camel coming out that doesn't depict history, maybe even accurately, much less in proper perspective and with balance and what actually happened. It's a travesty. It's one of the problems inherent in making issues like what should be in a textbook political rather than in letting parents decide whether they want to go to a school that uses a certain textbook, and then if they don't like it, go to another school.
Really, freedom is the answer to the problems we have today. Unfortunately, parents don't have freedom, and a lot of them don't even know that they need to be involved. They honestly trust the school system, and I think that Professor Merrifield sees the end result of this disastrous policy, and that's why he's written a book and is on the speaker's circuit. So anything else you want to ask, Chris?
I just wanted to bring that up, too. And Dr. Stan, sometime in the future, you could do about nutrition in the future, what's going on in the country.
Okay, well, you know, we've had some whole flock of very, very good programs with Dr. Blaylock, and we'll have to get him back on again because you've only done about 4 chapters out of the 15 or 20 chapters in his book.
You should ask him about nutrition in schools.
Okay.
It's pretty bad is what I've heard.
Okay, fine.
Grow a crop of fat kids.
We sure are, right? Anyway, thanks so very much, Chris.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. And I'd like to get back, of course, for a moment to certainly Ben calls. And Ben obviously feels that the children in the inner city are getting a rotten education. And I think he's absolutely right.
He is.
I mean, the best thing, though, is if we had a voucher system, and I don't know how it would be constituted, but to give the black parent the ability to take their child and put them in any school they wanted to, was within their reach, and would they have the money to pay for it?
Right.
But any idea that we're going to be able to save the public schools, in my estimation, I'm not as optimistic as anybody else. I think the public schools have failed. I think, personally, that every church should be a school, and the ministers ought to get involved in this, and the one reason we're in the trouble we are today is most of them don't have the courage to do it because they don't want to offend anybody. But I think that somebody, and certainly I think the ministers of this country, have a moral obligation to say we have a failed educational system, and we're going to take the responsibility. Because if they don't, and they won't, the parents. And, parents will follow the leadership of a minister. Unfortunately, the church is silent. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the public school system is just a traditional way of making decisions and spending money. And we can't afford to make that sacred, and certainly not make it more sacred than the lives of our children. We can't afford to sacrifice our children's future at the altar of some way that we've gotten used to deciding how to do things, especially given how badly it's performed. There isn't anything less accountable than our schools, and some are better than others, but hardly any of them get the value that we deserve out of the amount of money that we spend. As a columnist recently, actually a few years ago, said, it's a question of whether it's a disaster or a gold-plated disaster. And I would go with the latter a description. And I laugh because it's kind of funny the way to describe it that way, but it's laughably sad in that anyone can reach such a conclusion.
Well, how do you feel about homeschooling, about parents homeschooling their children?
Well, I think it's a freedom that you're entitled to have, and it's relatively effective, which is an incredible statement about our system that someone who has no specialized training in education, nothing more than a computer in many cases, can outperform by a substantial margin a legion of educational specialists.
Well, have you noticed the difference between homeschooled children and really the children that come out of our government schools?
Well, I haven't personally noticed it because they don't walk around with a sign on them that say, "I'm homeschooled." But what I hear is that these individuals are the most highly sought after college freshmen of any. And recently, I encountered a study that said there wasn't anything to this notion that they weren't properly socialized, and indeed they were more civilized than regular students. That if they were put on a playground with regular kids, trained professionals couldn't tell which of them had been homeschooled and which had not. They were equally sociable and had many other social skills as children of similar age did.
Well, of course, you know, they say, "Oh, well, gee, you've got to get around your peers." Well, the peer pressure is what's getting the kids into smoking and into sex and into drugs. And, you know, I personally believe that I'm a great proponent of homeschooling, and I really believe if you really care for your children, you're going to get them out of the government schools. And people say, "Oh, my school's all right. I mean, those other schools are bad." But, you know,
That's the Lake Wobegon syndrome.
Right. Well, anyway, of course, we've got a real problem, and really so pleased that you're willing to take this on. And of course, you know, they have this wonderful institute up in Oakland called the Independent Institute, and they send me their material on a regular basis and ask me, of course, to interview their guests, and that's how you happen to be a guest on our program. But the thing is, we have to reach out across America. Now, this program is heard on shortwave, it's heard on the internet, it's heard on an excellent station here in the Central Coast of California. The problem is, we're not reaching the major masses, the American people, and an awful lot of people, I don't think, are aware of the fact that there's a real problem. They don't see, as you do in your college classes, these children, you know, who have lost their sense of discipline and drive and really the study habits that are so essential for excellence. And, you know,
well, they didn't lose them. They never had them in the first place.
Well, but, you know, right now, increasingly, for instance, our white-collar jobs, our high-end jobs of that sort are being sent overseas. They can actually send them over to India, where they've got people they can hire at probably a quarter of what they can get people for here. And as more and more of our blue-collar jobs go out of this country, and more of our white-collar jobs go out of this country, we're going to have real problems. And of course, jobs
with
stakes
are being taken by immigrants.
Right.
I'm one.
How do you mean you're an immigrant? Where did you come from?
I was born in Germany, and I've been a naturalized citizen. I've shed my accent, but I'm an immigrant, and I attribute some of what I've been able to achieve to that different perspective that I had and that my parents had.
Well, of course, having served in military in Germany, you know, and worked among the Germans, you know, there's this very driving, very positive thing, you know, you have to accomplish, you have to succeed.
Right.
And of course, this is so important. You have to have that attitude, because when you get out in the real world, you either have this drive to succeed or you are, you know, in just a menial job for the rest of your life.
Yeah, you know, to fortify what you just said, I would challenge your listeners to grab the nearest college catalog they can find and to flip through there among the faculty and ask themselves, based on their names, how many of them they think are even naturalized citizens, much less native-born citizens. We are running the upper echelons intellectually of our country on immigrants, and thank goodness we're lucky to have them, and I thank God that I'm one of them, ones that's been had. But you know, no country, you know, Rome proved this back a couple thousand years ago. No country can succeed by importing talent. They have to grow some of your own.
Well, how old were you when you came to this country?
Just five or six. Here. I don't remember exactly, but 42 years ago, give or take.
Well, of course, you know, that's why, of course, you have no... but, I mean, you were certainly very Americanized. And
Absolutely.
But, you know, I think it was probably your parents' influence more than the influence in society. Your parents really are the ones who give you that background of, you know, of discipline. And a child without discipline, you know, is like a horse without discipline. And I remember going to a rodeo one time and seeing these horses that had never been ridden. And, of course, they were just really, they were good for nothing. Well, let's go to Jan, somebody or rather. Let's see. This is Ian. Is this Ian?
Yes, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Is this Ian from Canada?
Yes.
Okay, good to have you. Toronto?
Ontario, Canada,
all
north
right.
of Toronto.
Okay.
How
far are you from Bracebridge?
Just about 60 miles.
Oh, okay.
I know Bracebridge well.
Up by Muskogee Lakes, huh?
Yes, I'm just south end of Georgian Bay.
All right, fine. Well, what can we do for you?
Your guest's comments that he had come from Germany gave me an idea which your guest could comment on. I remember the history at the end of the Second World War. There was some controversy in the highest levels of the Truman administration as to how to deal with the denazified Germany. And there was a school of thought that Germany should be pastoralized, which meant the total deindustrialization of the country, and as well complete overhaul of the educational system. In fact, what's happened the last 50 years is that it's been the U.S. and North America that's begun the path of pastoralization with the downfall to the educational system, and it's Germany and the rest of Europe which have maintained as much industrial base as they could and a sound educational system.
Well, that's very interesting. What you're talking about really is the Morgenthau Plan, which was never enacted. And, of course, we can thank John McCloy for that. And, of course, Germany became then one of the great industrial giants of the world. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, because of the socialist influence there, she's having more and more problems. And actually today, it's cheaper to build a BW car over here in Greenville, South Carolina, than it is in Bavaria.
When did your guest come over to America? Was he largely educated in Europe?
No, I came over in just in time to get into first grade.
He was 6 years old. So anyway, we got real problems, as you know, Ian, and the problems you have in Canada are you know, just a reflection of what we have here in the United States.
Yes. Thanks again.
Well, thanks so very much, and please get all the rest of your Canadians out there listening to us. God bless
you. Yeah. Hey, you really get around, Stan.
Well, we're very, very fortunate.
I feel. Canada, Kentucky, Allentown, it was Pennsylvania, I guess. Wow.
Right. Well, that's we have listeners all over the country, and what a privilege it is, really, to do what I do 5 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Well, we're just about out of time. What are the parting thoughts you'd like to have for our guest today, and do you have something specific you'd like to tell them to do? Besides, of course, get your book. And could you give that title just one more time?
The latest book is School Choices, True and False, and published by the Independent Institute there in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
What would I like them to do? Vote for universal freedom and choice and a level playing field, and accept nothing less. And when someone proposes a dumbed-down school choice program, say we should be trying to transform the system, not just rescue a few kids from the worst schools.
All right, well, I certainly agree, and I think that we're going to have to take some dramatic steps, and I think that we're in for we're going to have a lot of changes in America in the next few years. I hope that they're for the better. Anyway, God bless you.
I was just going to say, for the sake of some optimism, I want you all to know that in 1987 and 88, most of us had no idea what was going to happen in Eastern Europe in 1989.
Yes, and right now, of course, Eastern Europe is just booming. It's amazing.
Right.
Apparently, a lot of the major industries have moved over there. And, you know, in fact, the growth in Eastern Europe is far greater than any growth in any other place in Europe today.
Well, they shed a lot of their shackles, and that usually produces rapid growth until they get them back again.
Right. Well, right here in America, we're moving more towards shackles than for freedom. Anyway, God bless you. Thanks so very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, fine. Well, of course, our guest has been John Merrifield. We've been talking about his book, School Choices, True and False. And, you know, I feel very badly about the children in the inner city, the blacks and the Hispanics. They're not getting a decent education. And I believe that is intentional. I believe it's purposeful in the same way that AIDS has a predilection for blacks. I think we planned that way. And that's why this new vaccine is more beneficial to them than the rest of them, because it's genetically modified. But that's another subject. We'll be back in just a few moments here at Radio Liberty. A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just talk about a few of the other things we have here that we hope that maybe you'll be interested in getting. One of them is a book we're carrying. It's called Regicide. It was written by a Mr. Gregory Douglas, who was a friend of Mr. Robert Crowley, who was the deputy director or assistant director of covert operations for the CIA. Now, the book was based upon the papers that Mr. Crowley left with Mr. Douglas after he died. And, of course, it tells why he and James Angleton and some of the others decided that President Kennedy had to be killed. They felt that that they were perfectly justified in what they did. It tells who they actually killed, pardon me, who they got to do the assassination. And it's an amazing, amazing story. And not only that, it has a list of CIA assets and people that Mr. Crowley felt he could call on here in the United States. One of them happened to be my next-door neighbor right here in Santa Cruz. So I think the book is fairly accurate. And we certainly suggest you get Regicide, because if the CIA could kill an American president and, of course, get away with it all this time, and you're never going to hear about this book from Barbara Walters or Dan Rather or Tom Brokaw, because the CIA has agents in every aspect of our society today. It certainly puts the Gestapo to shame. Regicide's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, another excellent book I could suggest is Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life by Dr. Blaylock, Russell Blaylock, a personal friend, a retired neurosurgeon in Jackson, Mississippi. And it's got a section in it on biological warfare and what you really should be thinking about doing to build up your immune system. I can tell you that we're having a hard time keeping this book in, because I think people all across America realize if there is a biological attack, you're not going to get any help from the government. You're going to have to make preparations right now, and you need to know what to get to protect yourself and your family. Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life is available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we ask you to consider getting a four-tape set that goes with that. It's called The Life-Saving Secrets, and it's four 1-hour interviews with Dr. Blaylock as we go into many nutritional things. But there's 2 hours on, of course, what to do as far as biological warfare in preparation for it and building up your immune system, which is really the way you have to go. And don't expect there's going to be a vaccine, and certainly don't expect there's going to be any antibiotics out there, because if we did have a biological attack, there would be chaos in America. and just as there was after September 11th. And we are on the verge of a war, ladies and gentlemen, one of the worst and most horrible wars, I believe, of all time. And, of course, you need to realize that what's happening is not by accident. It is part of this whole spiritual agenda I talk about in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And if you haven't read it, you need to get it and read it. You probably should get the Brotherhood of Darkness special, which is the book, a video, and an audio tape, and they all tell the same story, but we want you to listen to the video or watch the video and listen to the audio tape and read the book and then get this information to others so they will understand the spiritual forces that are working behind the scenes to deprive the American people of their freedom and indeed to destroy what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day, and of course, pay for the shortwave and pay for the radio time. But and being on the Internet is expensive. Everything we do is expensive. But, you know, we have some people who believe in what we're doing and support us on a regular basis. And if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes, you'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do. And our weekend program now certainly goes to 35 different stations. I knew there was a 35th station. We found out why we couldn't figure, know where it was. And then, of course, we do another program here in the Central Coast very often, about halftime on Saturdays here in the Central Coast, a full hour program. But of course, we hope that many of you will certainly want to be partnering with us in what we do. If you'd like a free copy of my newsletter, why give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Our January's newsletter goes into why we are going to war with Iraq. Our February newsletter simply records Senator Robert Burr's speech, and then, of course, an understanding of who the men were who began planning this war a long time ago and what their real agenda is. And, of course, we'll give you the references where you can go up on the Internet and get the things they wrote back in 97, really laying out the plan for American creating a new international order and America dominating the world. And this is what it's really all about, is the new ruling elite and, of course, everybody else being reduced to the condition of serfdom. And, of course, you need to have this information to begin making your plans in preparation for what lies ahead. So, again, the telephone number, if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, go to our website at radioliberty.com, www.radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs there either directly or you can listen to the archive programs, or you can link to our other programs early in the morning and early in the afternoon. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for the boys who are going to be going into battle. We ask you to pray for the Iraqi citizens. We ask you to pray for the Israeli citizens. We ask you to pray for the people over there in the Middle East. And then we ask you, of course, to pray for my ministry, for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection, because we're on the front lines of this battle. And so please remember to keep us in your prayers, and until tomorrow at the same time, when we'll be back with you, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Well, Sarah Midland.